Kentucky, the bluegrass state, home to Abe Lincoln, Muhammad Ali, Bourbon, and Colonel Sanders. This is the Outside Gate with Steve Hall from on the L4 Media Network, where we talk US moto and anywhere the conversation goes. And on the line today, we have a Kentuckian. Pooh Sipes, how are you?
I'm good, man. Doing good.
That's the way, man. You're fresh off Day in the Dirt glory just a couple of weeks ago, huh? You're still in the glow of Day in the Dirt glory, hey? How was that, man? That's definitely something I'd like to get to one day.
Yeah, it's ever since the first year I've done it, it's the most fun race I've ever done. So I try to get back every year, and I'm still not maybe completely recovered from it. It's trying to do the Ironman, especially when I only ride about five times a year, is just brutal. But yeah, two out of three times that I've tried it, I got it. The one time I didn't get it, all that misery was for nothing, I guess. I wouldn't say misery, but at the end of the coup de grace, you're hurting pretty bad, hands are bleeding, you know, you have nothing left in the tank, and it makes it all worth it if you get the trophy. But if you don't get the trophy, I mean, it's still fun. It's still cool to look back and, you know, you still did it. But, yeah, the trophy makes it worthwhile. I wish I would have brought the trophy home so I could have it on here and show you.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of the trophy. It is a little Iron Man. Yeah.
They make it there during the 3 days because they practice Friday, race Saturday, and Sunday. And the people come and weld and build it all there. So nice. So everybody can see. It's super cool.
Yeah, that is cool that they're making it while they're there. Yeah. It means a bit more, I reckon, when that's the case. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Everybody sees it getting made the whole time. And then I think they actually got like a couple riders and stuff to come weld some stuff. I think Moose Can went over there and welded some stuff on it and all that. So it's super cool trophy.
That is cool, man. It's Ironman. So how long is that?
So the Ironman, you have to do five classes. Four that you have to do, and then one elective. So you got to do the two-stroke class, which is a 30-minute moto.
Yeah.
And they have different classes of all these. Like they have a pro, and then a B, and then whatever. Well, the two-stroke is actually separated by age, but
yeah,
you do the two-stroke. It's 30-minute moto, and then you do an iron 15-minute team race. Moto Agogo. So you got to have a teammate for that, and you're scored, you know, how your team does. And then I did my elective, which was vet. I did vet pro, I think it was.
Yeah.
That was a 40-minute moto at the end of Saturday. And then Sunday afternoon, you do Ode Switcheroo, which is basically the same thing as the Moto Agogo. It's an iron 15-minute race. With a teammate, and then right after that, you go back, you put gas in your bike, and then you come up and do coup de grace, which is minimum hour and a half, but I was told they can wait as long as they want to throw the checkered. So,
you can't even have it in your mind like, oh, you know, this, you know how long a lap is, and you're like, you know, I know what that's like doing, you know, even my slow old ass, if I do an off-road event, I'm doing the maths in my head, like how many laps. Like that'd be painful when you don't know when they're gonna throw the flag. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it makes it tough. So 2 years ago when I won it, well, I didn't win the coup de grace. I won the Ironman. I was in third in the coup de grace, and we were pitting like two or three turns before the finish line.
Yeah.
But you couldn't see the finish line. Because you got to put gas, obviously it's not going to run. So I had to pit twice, and I came around, pit the last time, got passed, ended up fourth, but the checker flag was two turns later. Oh. So I would have made it, but I had no way of knowing if it was going to get thrown or couldn't see if it had already threw for the first guy or not. So this year we pitted right after the checker flag, and I had I had a buddy pit me, and he was actually he. I said, "Pull me off after 40 minutes. Don't let me go longer than 40 minutes." Because I did the 40-minute race Saturday evening, and was pretty much dry. So I said, "Pull me off right at 40 minutes or just before." And the first time he pulled me off, and I had no, concept of time. I'm just trying to ride and survive because I'm already hurting from the day before. And he's like, "Oh, I pulled you off a little early." And then my bike only took like a gallon of gas. And so I go back out there. I'm doing laps and laps and laps and laps. And every time I come over the finish line, I look over. He's not saying anything. Look over every time. And then I come around and he's like, "One more lap." So come around and I'm like, "All right, I just got to finish this lap. I can at least get a drink of water and then I should have 10, 15 minutes left if it's an hour and a half." And come around, it was checkered flag. So he was doing the math after I pulled over pit. He's like, "It took a gallon." Then they're Googling. They're like, YZ252 stroke takes 1.8 gallons, and if it took him this long and that." And so they figured it out that I would make it the whole way, but I'd like to see how close I actually was to running out, because that would have been, do all that all weekend and then run out of gas last lap and not get the Iron Man. That would have been tough.
I love it, man. I love events like that. We don't really have anything like that here. Where it's like, the rules are just there's just sort of some made up rules to make things harder or more fun or interesting and that sort of thing. Yeah, I think Aussie racers would freak out about that. They'd probably freak out about because our stuff's usually very very strict. There's not a lot of things like that. But yeah, I love it. It's definitely. One of those day in the dirts is definitely something I'd like to get to one day, man.
That was another thing that caught me off guard the first year I did Coup de Grâce. So you go out and everybody like lines their bikes up in this big circle, like massive circle, because there's hundreds of people riding. And then you're supposed to get somebody to hold your bike, and he's like, "Come in here, we're gonna have a meeting." He gets everybody in around him real close, and then he'll do something. He won't tell you what he's gonna do. The first year he threw his hat up in there, and that was the start of the race. Nobody had any idea. So he threw his hat, and I'm like watching his hat, watch it hit the ground. I look over and everybody's getting on their bike, and then I run to my bike and get, so I got a terrible start. So I was kind of prepared for that this year. And this year was a siren. But I still, didn't get the best start, but much better than the first year. First year I had no idea.
That's it. Yeah, that's good. Good. Yeah, I love that. I've seen a couple of things like that. I remember a guy getting everybody to sit on their bike backwards for an off-road start once. Just there was a junior race, so it was no sheep stations at stake. But yeah, they all and it's funny. Everyone's sort of jumping around. They're trying different techniques, and some of them are just like falling over and all that sort of thing. So yeah. Stuff like that's cool, man. Cool.
I think it's makes you gotta have some silly stuff like that. It just makes it fun. That's what's cool about Day in the Dirt is like the number one goal there is just fun. And it's like not much pressure. Well, it wasn't any pressure until I won my first Ironman. Then now I have pressure to try to win it every time I go. But
The expectations,
it's I had no expectations of winning it my first year because I like literally don't hardly ride anymore. So I'm just so out of shape. I mean, I'm still like, if you looked at me, I would look like I'm in shape, but there's nothing. You can be in the gym every day and then and not ride and go ride and you'll be smoked. So
Nothing replaces riding. Yeah, that's for
no,
sure.
not at all.
Cool, man. Hey, we might get into so your early days, man. My first question's pretty much always, when did the bug bite, man? When did you first decide or how that you love dirt bikes and that's what you wanted to do?
Well, I got my first dirt bike on my second birthday. I mean, I'm sure I was way into it before then, because Ryan, my brother, was already riding. And my dad used to ride. I think he kind of quit when I came around. He had to work on our bikes and get us to the line and this, that, and the other. But He made it was a Suzuki JR50.
Yeah.
Actually, we still have it. And he made some homemade training wheels that bolted in place of the foot pegs. And it was Ryan's first bike when he was two. And then I got it on my second birthday. So, yeah. And we just, you know, rode every day after school. Loved it.
Yeah.
Rain, snow, didn't matter.
Awesome, man. What was the junior, like the junior scene like in Kentucky? Was there, you know, was there a lot of places to ride, race? Like, when was your first race and that sort of thing?
My first race was, I forgot even what it's called. But yeah, there was quite a few tracks around. There was Litchfield, and I mean, there was quite a few tracks within 3 hours, and then a lot of tracks within 6, 7 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
And we went basically every weekend. Like, I'm looking back, I have no idea how Mom and Dad did it. They both worked full-time jobs. Mom was a teacher. Dad worked at Flaherty Tractor Company, where he was partial, I don't know if he was partial owner. I think my papa still owned it at that point. But they worked full-time jobs. Friday, Dad would get off at 6 p.m., drive all night. We would race Saturday, Sunday. He would drive all night, and he'd go to work Monday. And I'm like, and then we were riding, you know, before we got sponsored or anything, we were riding the old bikes, just stuff that he could come up with, put together. I remember it might have been Ryan's first KX100. We got it in Tupperwares from somebody. It was just parts, and Dad put it all together. So it's just crazy how they made ends meet and got us, you know, got us where we are.
I can tell you're very grateful for it though, man. That's, you know, that's,
It's, looking back, it's kind of crazy how much they did for us, which, yeah, I mean, I guess that's what parents do, but it's like, man, that'd be tough. Like, they're running off no sleep, going, you know, at the races and then going to work, then, you know, on Monday. So it's pretty crazy.
A lot of mums and dads out there doing that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, you see kids that are really grateful, and then sometimes, unfortunately, you see kids that aren't. So
yeah,
but that's usually a pretty good measure. It's often a good measure of whether those kids will succeed too, as to how their attitude is on that point, isn't it?
So, yeah, and that's what a lot of kids are. They just take it for granted, especially like even back then. You know, we didn't have brand new bikes. We didn't have a brand new motorhome. We didn't have, you know, they just, you know, made ends meet the way they could. And me and Ryan both learned a lot. Like, I mean, that's how I know how to work on everything. Like, we, from, you know, I was probably, I don't know, 8 when I started, you know, changing filters and doing all this. And we always took care of our practice bikes. Now, Dad would work on the race bike and stuff. And at the races, he would work on the bikes. But we just sit out there with him when he's working on the bikes, and he'd teach us how to do it. And then that's just kind of how we learned everything, which is good, because there's a bunch of kids that race that don't know how to change a filter or change the oil, like nothing. Which is just crazy to me. Like, there's people come ask me to do stuff for them. And I'm like, really? You can't do that? They're like, no, I've never touched a bike. I just ride them. I'm like, man, that's crazy. Crazy to me. But
it makes
you appreciate it a little bit more when you're the one working on your bike. And, I don't know. I think it's just a little bit different. Some kids are quite spoiled, I guess.
Yeah, they are. Some are. Yeah.
Better terms. Like, I don't want to, you know, bash on anybody. I'm not bashing on anybody, but just they would appreciate it more if they had to do more.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you see it. You see it for sure at junior races and that sort of thing. It's very easy to tell those two types of kids apart. That really stands out when you see them in the pits, man. Yeah, you can really see that. Like my dad basically my dad wasn't into dirt bikes, and it was basically I got my first toolbox, which I still got. I got it. It was a big tool chest, and it was like my dad took me to a shop and said, "The next two birthdays and the next two Christmases, and that's yours." So I got this big toolbox, and I was like, "Oh yeah!" And he's like, "Your bikes, you figure out how to work on them." And he just let me go. But he'd be there if I broke something or I really fuck something up. Like he'd come and rescue me, you know. I remember the first time I stripped a head bolt, and he's like, "Okay, all right, we've got to put a helicoil in that," and he did that for me and showed me how to do it. And I'd butcher things and all that sort of thing, and then he'd come and show me the right way. But yeah, it was just, "Here's some tools, you better figure it out." So I
Well,
still
that's the best
remember,
way to learn.
yeah, I remember. I ain't over revving out of that anymore because I built that motor. I know how small those parts are, and I know how that all works. And yeah, that cured me of revving things when they're cold and all those sort of things that I did beforehand. Yeah, so you
Yeah,
learn,
once
yeah.
you see the internals, it changes well, and when you got to fix it, it changes how you treat the motorcycle too. And that's the same thing with like vehicles and stuff. I just rebuilt the Suzuki Samurai motor, and after seeing how like they don't even technically have bearings. It's just oil bearing. The
Yeah,
oil is
just
the bearing.
shells. Yeah.
So it's like after seeing that, it's like, man, you want to put good oil and everything, and you want to change it really often, because if not, you're ruining that thing. So that's a in my experience, the best way to learn is basically screwing it up the first time, and then
And then
then you won't do it again. It's a hard lesson, but yeah, when everybody, like, how do I learn? Well, just take it apart and try to figure it out. Like that's the best way. If somebody tells you or you read it in a book, you don't get it the same as if you're figuring it out yourself.
That's right. Yeah, that's the go, man. Hey, what was so the Kentucky man? I was trying to think who are the famous moto guys from Kentucky, and obviously, I think even though I'm sure he started with moto, Nicky Hayden, ended up being a road racer. I'm sure he started it with moto. Who else, man? So you guys, Nikki, and who else is there?
Ben Riddle, you remember that name?
I can't remember the name. Yep. Yep.
Trying to think who else was, I don't know. I'm sure there's been a few,
Yeah.
but like the fastest guy I think to come out of Kentucky was Ben Riddle.
Yep.
He was just insanely fast, and he raced it. He lived like an hour and a half from us,
Yep.
so we went to all the races and watched him race, and we're all like, just in awe when he's on a, Suzuki 125 just screaming.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm drawing a blank on anybody else
Yeah,
right now.
that's all right. Riddle. Yeah, so I didn't think there was too many then. Yeah, there wasn't. Because I'm a bit of a historian, that one had me a bit stuck, who there was. I mean, everyone thinks of Nicky, I guess, but all those guys, they all start in the dirt, and then so sometimes, sadly, I reckon we lose them to road racing because I'm a dirt guy. So, but yeah, some of them want to go that way, but yeah, no, that's cool, man. That's cool. You would have gone to Loretta's, you and Ryan would have gone to Loretta's. You want to, yeah, tell us a bit about that, those days.
We went. I've went. Well, I raced it a bunch of times, I guess, from 92 to 2000, 2006. I raced it. But I've went every year from probably since I was two until I didn't go last year. But up until last year, I made it every year. just to go, and I would just go fish in the creek, watch some A motos and this, that, and the other, just to keep the tradition, I guess. But yeah, it was 3.5 hours from Loretta's, or we lived 3.5 hours from Loretta's, so it was not that far of a trip. And then, you know, once we got on Team Green, we were required to do a certain, I guess they call them majors now, but we just called them amateur nationals. So Loretta's and Mosier Valley, Minio's, I think those were the three that technically we had to go to. But yeah, Loretta's is one of the, I mean, obviously the best amateur national. Just the atmosphere is different than anything else. And you got the creek, like you spend half the time playing in the creek when you're a kid, catching crawdads. Back then it was jumping off cliffs. They don't let you do that anymore. But they had a bunch of cliffs and trees and stuff jumping in the creek and rope swings. And then you always had, for sure, you always had at least one mud moto in each class. That's just a given at Loretta's. I hear lately they have had a couple years that didn't have mud motos, but I always look forward to the mud. I don't know if I was good in it or everybody else was just worse. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
the people that I could, you know, just keep up with in the dry, I could beat in the mud. So I don't know if they were worse or I was better. But that's another thing. I feel like kids don't ride and practice in mud anymore. They don't ride in mud. If it's muddy, they don't ride.
I think there's a bit of that, you know. It's a lot of reasons too, I think, you know. I mean, I think maybe the cost is a part of that too, you know.
Because
bikes get roached in the mud, you know, so that's going to cost out a fortune. And also just I think some of the parents and that they're so time poor as well. They're so busy, and you know, getting a bike ready after a dry race is like probably less than a quarter of the time getting a bike ready after a mud race, you know.
Yeah.
The cleaning and the parts you got to change and all that sort of thing, you know. I can sort of see why, but then it certainly does affect them when it gets muddy, and that's right through to the pro guys, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's and it seems like a lot of the fast kids these days and the amateurs are just staying at training facilities, and a lot of times they don't ride when it's muddy because it just ruins the track, you know.
Yeah.
Where we built our track with a tractor and a grader box, so it wasn't that hard to fix it. We didn't have, you know, big jumps and all this, so
yeah.
If it was muddy, we'd go out and ride, which was cool. It you learn a lot in that. And then as I've gotten older, I ride less in the mud for the reasons you're saying. You can it hard on a bike, and then it takes three times as long to wash the bike and all that stuff. So I guess you could say I'm a little lazy when it comes to you know, washing my own bike. I would rather go around the mud puddles.
I understand that. If the whole track's wet, you know, like you just got to get into it. But if there's wet spots, sometimes I'll go around them because I am thinking about that. You know, I'll take a dry line instead. You know, so you know when you're just having fun, cool, man. And then your pro career, man. So a few top tens, man. What? So I noticed a couple of them were in Jacksonville, man. Was that just a good spot for you, or was that just happenstance? Or why Jacksonville?
Yeah. I don't know. Probably just happenstance, I would guess. Because I didn't even remember that I had a few like more places or more in one place than others.
There was a couple of Jacksonville top tens there. So now that's
do you know what years though that was? I mean, it was in, I would assume it would have been in the 250 class. It might have been, I mean, that might have been like the home race for me, because we were in the wintertime, we would stay GPF in Georgia, so it wasn't
Okay.
super far from there.
Yep.
That's the only thing I could think, maybe,
Yeah.
but also I have way more friends go to Indy. Up there, you would think, it's like a hometown vibe. You would think I would have did good up there also, but I mean, I did good, but
What was your favorite place to race? What was your favorite track?
Supercross
Supercross.
or motocross? I like the Indy. Just because it was, even when it's dry, it's almost like a mud race there.
Yeah.
It's just ruts everywhere.
Yep.
Trying to think what else. I mean, supercross track's kind of a supercross track. You just the dirt's different in the different stadiums. Like Dallas, I did not like that because their dirt, they got better dirt now, but their dirt was like, when you rode it, you would have thought they built it with mud and then let it bake, because it was just
Okay,
rock hard, and like the jumps wasn't perfect all the way across like you can make with good dirt. There was like tracks that have hardened, so there's kickers everywhere, and then like the West Coast stuff, it's always pretty hard packed because it gets sunbaked. But yeah, I mean, as far as Supercross goes, it's hard to pick like a favorite unless you're going off crowd or just the dirt.
Yeah, fair enough. What about motocross then? What was your favorite track there?
I think Redbud. I never did, well, that wouldn't have been in it either. But I like High Point, Redbud. Yeah, I'd say those are my favorite two. Wasn't big on West Coast stuff. Didn't like Freestone because I'm not a sand rider.
Yeah.
Definitely didn't like Southwick. I almost didn't make the motos there. The only one I almost didn't qualify for. Yeah, I would just go Redbud for sure is my favorite.
Yeah, cool, man. Is the atmosphere of Redbud part of that, or is it just because of good dirt, good track, or a bit of both?
That atmosphere was good. It's close-ish to home, 5.5 hours from
Okay, yep.
home in Kentucky. So all the friends and family and everybody went to that one. And then just the whole grandstand, screaming when you jump the leap, and then just the dirt. It's like kind of sandy, but not sandy enough to where I wasn't good in it. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So kind of loamy, I think
Yeah, and
you
then they
Aussies
had
would
like,
probably describe it as loamy, maybe.
yeah, they
Yeah.
had like the sand rollers, and the whole track was like kind of sandy, but like not like Southwick sandy.
Yeah.
So the dirt was always good there. They prepped the track, or like, I guess, yeah, prepped the track. The track was always stayed good throughout the day. Didn't get like hard pack and dry. And then yeah, you come off and then go hang out with all your buddies and your family and all that.
Yeah, cool. A cool atmosphere there, man, for sure. Yeah,
Yeah. Have
that's
you have you what's your favorite outdoor?
man. So I haven't been to a US outdoor.
No?
Nah, man, I've only been over once. So ever since I was a little kid, man, fascinated with and huge fan of US moto. So hence why I'm a historian of it, I guess.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And it's only just January this year, man, was the first time I came to the States. So and
Gotcha.
went to Anaheim one and had a look around Southern California and that sort of thing. But that's it, man. So like I've got a long bucket list of things to get to in the States, man. But yeah, Redbud would be the national I'd love to go to, though, for sure. Yeah,
Yeah.
man.
I would recommend that one over the other ones.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of
Of
mates
sane
who go to
or race.
Redbud every year. So
Yeah.
yeah, I've got a got a camp spot there locked in whenever I want to go with those guys. And they'll basically, I just got to fly in somewhere there, and then they'll take care of me from there. So in the plans, like day in the dirt and that sort of thing. A lot of things like that I'd love to do, man. So yeah, I plan.
Yeah,
to.
I would. Do you still ride much?
I still do, man. Yeah. So I've never been a good rider, man. This is a good way to show how much I love riding, is that I'm 48 year old and I'm still a C grader. So I still, that you show you when you suck at something that bad, but you've done it for what have I done it for? Nearly 40 years I've done it for, and I still suck. So it shows how much I love it. Yeah, man. So yeah.
Sounds like my golf career.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at it, but it's fun.
Well, that's another question, man. So what other skills, what else do you get into? What do you do in your downtime? So golf, man?
Yeah, generally, especially down here in Florida, because I don't have my shop and stuff down here. So, the weekends I'd go play golf with some buddies, and I thought golf was the most stupid sport ever until somebody drug me out to play, and then I've been hooked ever since. Back home in Kentucky, I used to play every Tuesday night scramble, and I actually got what I would call pretty good there for a while. And then I don't know what happened, but I'm not good anymore.
Yeah.
And it's
played, man, but I hear, a lot of moto guys play, and I hear a lot of it creates a lot of frustration,
Well, the frustrating part, it's not that frustrating when you're playing and you suck and you've never been good. But once you've gotten to where you were good and you can hit the ball the way you want to hit the ball, whenever you can't do that anymore, it's so frustrating. I don't know. I think that's why I love it so much, because it's difficult. It is definitely frustrating. Actually, we're going to go, me and a buddy are about to go to the Masters, which is like a bucket list. You can't get tickets for that. He just won the ticket lottery. We're going to go up there for a practice round. We're not going to be there on the actual tournament, but while they're doing practice rounds up there. So that'll be cool. We're going to do a little road trip up and play a couple courses on the way up. Mike, I've been golfing with him. He's been like the main guy I've been golfing with down here. Played some cool courses, and that's basically every weekend I try to play golf once. And it doesn't always happen, but that's kind of like where you're carefree. You ain't got to worry about work. You ain't got to worry about this or that. You just go out and have fun with buddies.
Yeah. You get to switch off for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing, I guess, I was big into bass fishing there for a little while. Still like to bass fish. I don't know. I'll be, once I move back to Kentucky here next month, I'll probably be fishing quite a bit more. Because the kid I'm about to go work for, his little brother is huge into bass fishing. So I'm sure me and him will do quite a bit of bass fishing. And then I got too many hobbies, by the way, and they're none of them's cheap. But and then I like to build like rock crawlers, like off-road, vehicles. So I'm hoping to one day, it might be far-fetched, but one day maybe just start a little YouTube channel of building rock crawlers and doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I've seen videos of them, but that's about sort of all I know. Yeah, I know there's a place here in Victoria where you can I actually bought a voucher for a wedding present for my best mate when he got married, to go to this rock crawler place and drive the rock crawlers and that sort of thing. So yeah, and he loved it, man. He reckoned, because even he said even though it's slow, it was so interesting and so much fun. You know, like there wasn't like a speed rush, but he said it was just so cool. And yeah, they did, they had instructors and that sort of thing. And yeah, Interesting, man. So you're actually building something. You've built your own one, have you?
Yeah. Well, I got one that's it's not like super built, but I'm about to build. I mean, I've got all these projects in mind, and I'm planning, you know, three ahead and start getting parts and this, that,
yeah,
you know, finding parts on Facebook Marketplace and this, that, and the other. But yeah, I got a Suzuki Samurai. Well, yeah, I got a Suzuki Samurai. That's the one that I use currently, or I will, yeah, when I go back to Kentucky. And then, I'm about to build Suzuki Samurai 10 top with all Toyota running gear, axles, all that stuff. And then while I was down here, I bought some 1-ton axles that I'm going to put under. I don't know what I'm going to put it under yet, but I got a few other Samurai bodies, so I might as well just keep with the theme and do that.
And they've got separate brakes on each wheel and that sort of thing. Is it like, are you into it that?
No, this, well, possibly the one I build with 1-tons might.
Yeah.
Because I have a transfer case in it where I can put power only to the front wheels or only to the back wheels. And then if you put power to the front wheels, you can hold one of the left brakes and spin the front wheels and kind of, they call it a front dig, and turn around obstacles without, you know, forward, back, forward, back, forward, back kind of deal.
Yeah. Cool, man. Cool. And what, so you've got somewhere back home where you've obviously got a course or.
There's all kinds of them.
Yeah, cool. There's lots of places to drive it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think over where I'm going to be living here next month, they got a bunch of places over there too. I mean, you can drive 6 hours and go to some huge, huge places in the mountains.
Mm. Cool, man. Hey, I forgot to ask you earlier on there. What is your day job, man?
Right now, I maintain a supercross track at a facility. And also anything that breaks, or, I mean, I've done anything from trenching for electrical lines to wiring stuff up to building offices, fixing a water truck, kind of anything, just kind of do whatever. But I guess the main thing is to maintain, rebuild, change whatever the supercross track.
Yeah, cool. And you said you're going back to Kentucky to work for a young bloke. That'll be, so you're like looking after his track, building his track and that sort of thing?
No, I'll be doing that too. But I will be mechanicking for him.
Okay. Yeah.
Mechanic, riding coach, you know, track builder, motorhome driver, just kind of whatever.
Cool.
And all of it.
Cool. So you'll be going to Loretta's with him?
Yep.
That's the plan.
Cool.
And you raced a Loretta's in fairly recent times, didn't you? Did you race a Loretta's?
Say what?
You raced at Loretta's fairly recently, like in the last couple of years?
No, I have not. I have not.
You haven't?
No, I went every year just to go and watch, but I haven't raced it since the year before I turned pro, so 06 was my last year.
Yeah, cool. Any thoughts of racing it?
I thought about it. I actually, during COVID, they didn't do area qualifiers, and then everybody was invited to the regional.
Okay, yeah.
And I hadn't been riding whatsoever, but I went down to Aonia Pass and tried there, and I missed it. Handlebar mounts came loose the last moto.
Oh.
But yeah, I missed it. I was trying to go back in 25 plus, and that's kind of the only class, that and pro sport, that I can ride until I'm 45 is the next age class that you can ride with pro points or whatever.
Yeah. So, 25 plus is pretty hardcore, man. That's
Well,
it's pretty hardcore. Yeah.
The thing is, If I was to go back to Loretta's, I would go back to try to win, and I don't have time to ride and train. I don't. I got to pay the bills, so I can't just ride and train all the time. I got to work. So, but I don't know. Maybe 1 year I'll just quit working so much and do a bunch of local A races and try to make money that way, and maybe go back.
Cool, man. Cool. Hey, it's time for an ad read, man. So I don't know what sort of seats you use, but I'm pumped to announce that Guts Racing have come on board as a sponsor of the Outside Gate. And in 1990, Jamie Gregg and his dad, he fired up Gregg's Ultra Chick seats. And I reckon it's lucky that he was a Californian and he come up with that the name of Ultra Trick. Like, imagine if he was an Aussie, they would have been called Gregg's Bloody Ripper seats, and just that wouldn't have sounded right. Or imagine if he was British, and it would have been called Gregg's Proper Brilliant Seats. That sounds pretty better. What if he was from Kentucky? What would they have been called?
Don't even know.
Hey, they wouldn't have been saying Ultra Trick in Kentucky, would they? There'd be something else, you know.
No, I don't even know what it would be back then.
But anyway, so lucky that he was Californian and come up with Gregg's Ultra Trick Seats. So when Mookie Fever is engaged on his factory husky that is on a gut seat. In fact, the whole factory husky team uses gut seats. When Kenny's hole shotting, when Chiz's chising, they're on their Hep Suzukis with gut seats. And also Moto Concepts Honda. So when Freckle's out there, Phoenix Honda, so Dylan Ferrandis, PRMX Kawasaki, when our Aussie guy there, Aaron Tanti's there, Cade Clayson, Next Level Racing KTM, AEO KTM, and countless privateers also using those gut seats. Gutsracing.com. That's real easy to remember if you're looking for the best seats in the world. Gutsracing.com. Real easy to remember. And if you're not using a Guts Racing seat, you need to take a good hard look at yourself. Even my old ass sits on one, you know. So it's not just for the fast guys. If you're a slow guy, it'll make you a little bit less slow even. So get around those Guts Racing seats at gutsracing.com. Cool, man. Cool. Hey, so many fun things you do, man. So I wrote a little list in here of the things, and I sort of want to hear a bit about all of them or any of them. So you did the Terrain Inferno hard enduro, the pit bike races at Pastrana Land, which I've definitely got to hear about them. And I've even seen snowmobile racing. And then obviously a lot of people probably know that you're also driving monster trucks, man. So yeah, you're like a professional fun haver, you know. So like,
That's the plan.
tell
That's the
us about
goal.
those things, man. Any of them or all of them, man.
Yeah. The what was the oh the Terra Inferno.
Terrain Inferno. Terrain Inferno, yeah.
Yeah, it was that was another one of those things that it was like I haven't been riding, but yeah, let's go do a race 'cause it would be fun.
It
And we
was
flew
two
down.
days, a 2 day hard enduro,
Yes. Was it 2 or 3? We had three. It was 2 days, but one of them was at night.
yeah? Okay.
Yeah, that was, and I'd never done a hard enduro, and so we flew down there, and they had bikes like betas and whatever, and they're like, oh yeah, they had this line of bikes. They're like, pick whichever one. They wasn't used. They're like people's bikes that were just like letting us use them. That it, they rounded up, and so I picked out a bike that night and stuck my stickers on it and whatever. So the next day we get to and set levers, whatever. And it was a Beta 300. The next day we get there and it's 5 minutes before we're about to take off. And somebody comes over and it's like, that's my bike. You can't ride that bike. And I'm like, what do you mean? They said I could ride any bike. They're like, no, that's the bike from the shop. This, that, and the other. He's riding this bike. What, a guy from down there, I guess.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, what bike can I ride? So they point to this other one. I put the stickers. Well, I missed the wheelie competition to get gate pick because I was trying to figure out what bike I was on.
Yeah.
So anyways, took off and I got maybe a lap or two in and clutch went completely out. You could pull it all the way to the grip and it wouldn't do anything. So it would go, but you couldn't pull the clutch in. It wouldn't do
Yeah.
anything. And which is not what you want on a hard enduro
No,
course.
definitely not. Definitely not.
No, but I
Yeah.
made it out of there, back to the pit, pulled in, went in, they bled it was out of fluid, this, that, and the other, went back out, it did it again. Anyways, I finished the race. So then that night we had to do a night enduro course, and it's like in this big pit. So we walked the track, and I'm like, I don't think I can go around this. Like, I don't think I can make it one lap. Like, it was that difficult looking. It looked impossible. And so, but I was like, well, I was like, if I can make one lap, we'll be doing good. So we took off, and I made it around the first lap in like 20 minutes. And I'm like, holy cow. Like, for one, they got the sticky tires, this, that, and the other. The betas are already like good off road. The Beta 300, it's a tractor. It's kind of like the KTM 300. And then the clutch, or no, the clutch was still good on that one. So anyways, the second time around, I crashed a million times, and it took me like another hour and a half to get one more lap. And then I sat right before the finish line because I was like, if I go back down in that pit, I'm not coming back. So I waited, 20 minutes for the leaders. They made like six laps or maybe more. I don't know. Those guys are crazy. I don't know if you've ever watched any of the hard enduro stuff, but
I have, yeah, for sure.
well, whatever you see on TV, it's like 1,000 times worse in person. Like, it's insane what they can go up. But anyway, so I finished that one, and then the next day was the one on the beach, which is probably where you might have saw some video stuff of it, where they
Yes,
got
I did.
the hanging platform. You step on, step off, and then the berm out over the ocean, the whole 9 yards. And I actually led that one for a couple laps until it started raining, and you go onto the hanging platform and then step off, and you land on a wooden thing or a wooden landing. And it hadn't been raining long, but that thing, as soon as I landed, wheels just came right out from underneath of me,
Just
and
like
I
ice,
crashed. Yeah,
yeah.
and then the clutch went out again. We finally figured out what it was, but see, and the mechanics down there that wanted to work on your bikes, it was like two mechanics for everybody down there, and they didn't speak any English, so I just kind of let them do their thing, and then on the beach before or after practice, I think the clutch went out. I actually like tried to work on it myself, and I was like, I'll just try to figure this out myself, and it ended up being the brake line was loose. So you only got so many pumps until it squirted all the brake
Just lose
out.
the fluid. So where was that race then?
Dominican.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool. Cool.
So yeah, it was that was one of the cooler races I've done too. Yeah, I guess the coolest races I've done is after I've been retired from from racing and real stuff. Well, it's less serious, more fun. Not that racing supercross is not fun, but like it's also a job. You're day in and day out working to do that. Where this one is, I just hopped on somebody else's bike and just went and rode and had a blast doing it. And
Yeah,
then the pit bike races, Pastrana's, and well, we have one on my land in Kentucky too, or two of them actually. But yeah, the Nitro pit bike races, that's a blast because built crazier and crazier tracks every year. The first year was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of crazy. And then before it was over, we had all kinds of over-unders and just whatever we could come up with. And it all worked somehow. Like, you'd look at it and be like, I don't know if this is going to work, or I don't know if I can make that. And we did one at Kevin Windham's house, and he just made – the whole track was just massive booters.
Yeah.
That was everything you could possibly do on a stock KLX 110 to make them. They looked like those massive dirt jump bicycle jumps.
Yeah.
That's basically what they were, just back and forth, back and forth. And we found out real quick that stock foot pegs –
yeah,
the stock foot peg bar does not hold up. Everybody's foot pegs were frowning.
It's amazing how well those bikes hold up, though, isn't it? Like, the things that people do, you know, adult body weight on them and that sort of thing. And just, it's amazing that just everything doesn't just break, you know. Like,
a lot bends. I've bent a lot of shocks, bent a lot of forks, swing arms. But that's because we're doing stuff that they were never even close to meant to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, a normal person on one, that thing will last forever.
Yeah.
But dummies like us that try to do stuff they shouldn't be doing, they do break, but it is amazing how well they hold up.
They take a lot first, Yeah, man. And how did you get into the monster trucks, man? How did that happen?
So my last 4 years racing Supercross, I was basically hurt the whole time. I'd be hurt for 9 months, train for two, do two races, get hurt. And I was like, man, I don't know. You know, this is starting to be not as fun because I'm just laid up on the couch all the time. So anyways, I was still riding and whatever. And didn't know kind of what I was going to do, if I was going to race or what. And somebody came down, and she actually drives monster trucks. And she came down just, it's like a holiday or something. She's good friends with my family and whatever. And she come down, and I give her a ride on my brother's Razor on a turn track. We set up a ISD track for him in the field.
Yeah.
And we got done with the lap, and she's like, I think I can get you a job. And I was like, all right. Because she was doing the Monster Jam Arena series, and you race Razors, and you got to race four wheelers. And then also the trucks, you do freestyle racing, all that stuff. So, she just gave me like the contact info, and I sent him a resume. I made a sick Razor track, with like doubles and stuff, and made a video and sent it in to him. And then they called me and like, hey, you want to come up and try out? And, I think they said they took 40 people through to try out that year, and they hired 8 of us, I think. Yeah, it wasn't till the end of the year until I knew that I got hired, you know, as a full-time driver or whatever. They say with age comes a cage, and I guess it was true in that, because I was sick of being hurt.
Yeah.
It was a Monster Jam was like a factory ride. You flew in, you drove the truck, you flew back home. Like, it was super. That was like my first factory ride, I guess.
How long did it take to get used to driving it? Like,
I mean, to just drive it around is not that big a deal. But once the rear steer was weird. And then like Tom Mintz, he calls them elephants on ice. Like, once they're going in a direction, that's where they're going to go. And you got to just try to control that in a way. But the rear steer, super weird. It's electronic, so it takes a second to steer. So you always got to go way earlier and then let off of it way earlier to go back to center. But as far as just driving it and like racing it in a circle like that, the rear steer was the hardest thing to get used to. But then all the tricks and stuff that we ended up doing, we didn't really practice. I went up, I did the tryouts, and it rained the whole first day we were there. We didn't even get to drive. Second day we went and played in the mud. We were probably in the truck for a total of maybe 10 minutes because you can only go for a minute or two until the thing's almost overheating and you come back in because they run so hot. And then I went back up there three more times, but like total in cab driving you're doing is like less than 30 minutes each time you go up there. And then they're like, here's this hockey arena that you got to drive in. Don't hit the wall.
Yeah. And
you go out and you do it. It's insane how much we can do in a hockey arena. Like legit with the dashers still up and everything. Like it's such a small place for those big trucks, but I don't know. There's a lot of like tricks and stuff we come up with, like the moonwalks and before I stopped doing it, we were actually doing backflips in those small arenas in the trucks.
Because the backflips they do on them, they're real tight, aren't they? It's like they don't need much. That's probably the trick you need the least room for.
Until it gets out. If you land it, it doesn't take much room. If you get sideways, squirrely, whatever, I mean, you're doing it right beside a wall. Well, at least in the arenas. When I did the stadium tour, you know, you got a lot more real estate to work with there.
I remember I took my son years ago when Damon Bradshaw was driving one. That was when we went.
I came to Australia. I was there for 3 weeks driving trucks out there.
Cool. That's the go. Very good, man. Very good. And what about the snowmobile racing, man? Is that I saw that on your Instagram, man. I only just come across that. So, what was that like? Is that something you've just done once, or was
never rode a snowmobile before. I went up there and did that, and Andrew's the guy's name, and he invited us all up, and he bought a bunch of snowmobiles off of Marketplace and Craigslist or whatever, and just fixed them up a little bit, and it was called the Ditch Bangers is the name of the race, and so they have all these different classes, and we went up there, and it was in the daytime, it was -17. It was insanely. I've never been anywhere that was that cold.
So where was that held?
It was Wisconsin, I think, or Minnesota.
Oh,
Minnesota.
Okay, yeah.
But it was. I don't know. I don't even know how cold it was at night. That's when we raced. And but yeah, I'd never rode a snowmobile in my life. We went out there and did practice, and it's definitely weird. I would like to ride like a legit. Like snow cross one or like a legit one. We had, you know, piece of junks that were not really meant to be on a track like we were on. So they were, it was pretty hard to turn. Like it was weird. The outside edge would catch and it was super weird, but that was a cool experience. I would like to go ride a snowmobile and like, you know, get to play around and like actually learn how to ride it instead of jumping right into a race. But hey, I made the main with a broken sled, and then something in the front end was broken. I couldn't turn very sharp left, so I couldn't really make the left hand turns, and Ryan didn't make the main. He's like, hey, ride my sled. I was like, all right, cool. And I hopped on it. And it died in the first turn and wouldn't start the whole main. So I didn't really even get to race it, but yeah, that was cool. A bunch of cool people up there. And Yeah, they invited a bunch of like the Nitro crew up, so we all kind of went up there and just hung out and had a good time.
That's the way, man. That's the way. Look, you're super skillful on a bike, man. But what skills would you love to have that you don't have, man?
As far as
Just
like
anything.
anything,
Anything, man, that you're just a skill that you'd love to have.
I'd like to have some golf skills
Just the golf
at the
skills.
moment. Yeah, I don't know. Usually, if there's a skill that I want to have, I just go try to get it, or try to practice and make it. I mean, I'd like to be better at bass fishing. I'd like to be better at reading the lakes, all that stuff. But yeah, usually, I don't know. I try to. Everybody in high school, they're like, "Why don't you get a real job?" Because racing supercross is not a real job, apparently. But I'm like, why would I go get a job and be miserable, or not miserable, but not like it when I could have a job that I like? So that's why I've lived my life. That's why I've done so many different things. But yeah, I don't know as far as a skill I would like to have. What's an example? What skill would you like to have?
I would love to be able to play the guitar. That's
Okay.
definitely the one that I can't do. I tried when I was a young bloke and I failed miserably. So I just don't have the coordination for it. So, yeah, that's definitely always mine. That would be, yeah, that'd be
My
amazing.
brother can play, and he tried to teach me on the way to a race in front of his motorhome. I was in the passenger seat, he was driving. I think this was when I was wrenching for him, and I tried to learn all the way to the race and never got it and was over it. Like, I didn't want to keep, like, I feel like you got to put a ton of time to make your brain know where your fingers go. And my problem is, like, I could get my finger there, but then it wouldn't be pressing the cord or pressing the string hard enough, or it'd be touching another string. Or I was like, man, this is too much. This is too hard for me. I'll just listen to you play. Like, 'cause I would love, that is a skill that I would love to have, to be able to, when you're sitting around a campfire, just hanging out, just picking and everybody's singing. Like, but that's why we bring Ryan along, but I would love to be able to do that. That would be cool.
The old campfire scene, man. Yeah, that is like sitting around a campfire is like my natural habitat. That or walking around the pits talking moto with people. That's probably the two times in my life where I am just at peace, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely resonate with the campfire thing. So yeah, that would be cool to be able to grab out a guitar. You know, like me and my mates, we always end up singing along to the songs on the radio, on the you know, radio or whatever. But none of us can play a musical instrument. Or one of my mates can play the didgeridoo. That's a bit of fun. But
The what?
the didgeridoo. So
What is that?
it is a it's an Aussie it's an Aboriginal instrument. So natives, the Aboriginals, and it's basically a big long hollow log that they play music through. And and my mate, he's a white Aussie, but he just learnt to play the old didgeridoo, or the didge as they call it. And that's a bit of fun, but it's not something you can play. You
And
can't sort
people
of play.
sing along.
No, you can't play a song to it. It's more like it's like a rhythmic sort of. Yeah, it's very hard to explain actually. Yeah, what it is, but yeah, he'll
It
drag
sounds like
that out.
you need to either learn how to play guitar, or make a friend that knows how, take him to the campfire.
I've actually got a mate who is a pretty good musician and that sort of thing, but he doesn't, you know, live close by or whatever. But yeah, and my daughter's learning though, so
Oh,
that's
nice.
over the yeah she's learning guitar and she's pretty keen on it and that sort of thing, and she seems pretty coordinated. So not like me with like fingers everywhere. My fingers only know about breaking the clutch, you know? So
yeah.
So that's the government. Yeah. But that the old campfire scene is definitely a good one, man. What you were saying before there about people at high school telling you to get a real job, man, that's a good segue into another question that I was going to ask. Is just a good bit of life advice for young people. So there'd be young people that are listening to this who are like-minded with, you know, you and with me, where, you know, normal stuff doesn't really suit you. You know, you like to have fun. So you got some advice for a young person like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before. I think it was my eighth grade. It was either seventh or eighth grade teacher on career day. Asked everybody to, you know, pick what they wanted to be when they grew up, you know, what job they wanted. And I said a pro supercross motocross rider. And she told me to pick something that could really happen. I wish I knew who it was so I could go back to them now. But yeah, just don't let anybody tell you you can't do something that you want to do, basically. I mean, a lot of people didn't think that I could race supercross, motocross, or drive. I didn't think that I could drive a monster truck. Like when I was a kid, I thought about, you know, because you watch it on TV. It's like, man, how cool would it be to have one here at the farm so we could just go out in the field and jump our natural double on a monster truck or whatever. But I never knew that it was a possibility. So I guess in that, as far as that goes, like, don't tell yourself that you can't do something that you think would be cool to do. Because it happened to me. I didn't think there was any way possible. I always kind of knew I was going to make my way. I was going to be a pro rider one way or the other. Whether I was not very good at it or I was really good at it, I was going to do it. But the monster truck thing, that was, that was kind of out of the blue for me.
Yeah, that's the guy. Good advice, man. Good advice. You know, like always, and I say the same to my kids, like, especially my daughter. She's a lot like me, and you know, high school, she's already left. Like, it runs in our family to not finish high school, you know. So it's she was really struggling with it, and you know, she's really clever and really different, and that runs in the family, but that school situation is just not for her. And I said, look, you know, Pa left school when he was 14. I left when I was 15, and we did all right. And now she left when she was 16. I said, you'll be fine. She's got a job. She's going great. She'll figure out life, you know, like runs in the family. So, you know, that, you can do whatever you want. Sometimes people don't fit in the mold of the normal education system and normal life's expectations, you know?
And you can almost use it, or you definitely can use it as motivation. Like anytime anybody tells me, whether it's you can't jump over that couch, well, I will jump over that couch. I might get hurt trying. I mean, I blew my shoulder out one time trying to jump over a bed.
Yeah,
for kind of the same reason. But use that. If somebody says you can't do something, use it as motivation to do it.
Yeah,
prove them wrong. That's I like to do that, and I guess I've kind of done that with my career as well. You know, the doubters or whatever.
That's it, man. Who was your, when you were a kid, man, who was your hero? Who was that, your childhood hero, like either moto or anything? So
I mean, I looked up to Ben Riddle, but he was like still kind of coming. He was still amateur when I was amateur, so I guess that that wouldn't really count there.
Still can be though, you know. It's just
I mean, Kevin Windham, Pastrana, I'd say those are probably the two. I like the Rocco too. But yeah, I don't know. I guess they were heroes, but I was never the one that was like the fanboy type. Like,
Yeah, I get
I've
what you
always
mean.
been towed at everybody, and I tell people this, like when I was doing the Monster Jam stuff, and they're like, "Oh, it's so cool to meet you, this, that, and other." I'm like, "I'm just a person like you. Like, we're all just people." So yeah, I looked up to him, but I was never like that person that was like, "Oh, if I could just meet so and so, you know."
I get what you mean. Yeah.
But yeah, I look up to him, and like a lot of times we would try to like mimic how they ride and stuff like that. Like, you know, try this corner and like get in the form, like act like you're Kevin Windham, like, or act like you're Travis Pastrana, elbows way up, whatever. So that kind of stuff. I guess you would say, well, we definitely looked up to him, but learned from him also.
Yeah, cool, man. Cool. All right, man. I have a couple of just random different questions towards the end of the show.
All right.
Dude, who's your celebrity hall pass? So I think you got a girlfriend, I think, or
I do
married?
not. I do
No,
not.
okay. So you don't even need the hall pass then, man. So that's it. So who's your celebrity crush then, man? Who's your who is that?
I don't even know. I don't. Honestly, I don't know many celebrities' actual names. I call them by what they are in the movies.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
Man, who would that be? I don't even know, to be honest. Never even really thought about this.
Yeah, that's all right. Maybe it's got, it must be the, because you're single, you don't need to think about that. Maybe it's the old blokes that are married. We all have that
Yeah.
celebrity crush hall pass thing. So
Now
yeah, that's all right, man.
I'm gonna have to think about that.
Ah, cool, man. That's all right. And then just, we were talking a little bit about music before, man. Like, what if you could have, what you could only have one album to listen to for the rest of your life, what album are you choosing?
Heck on you. These are all hard questions for me. I'm not good with favorites. Dang. Man, I'm gonna make your segment really terrible because I can't think of any.
That's all right, man. What sort of music are you into?
I kind of like anything but rap. I'm not a big, like, some of the old rap. I like old rap. The new rap I'm not much into.
Yeah.
But I listen to a lot of rock and country.
Rock and country, yeah. That's pretty much a staple for moto guys, I think. It's mostly, rock and country. Oh, the young ones is rap, like the younger ones is definitely rap. But yeah, like I like everything, man. So yeah, but I'm a bit the same as you. I don't really like the new rap, old rap. Like I love a bit of Ice Cube, stuff like that. But also, I love like old school country, old school rock, all that sort of stuff. I'm big on like with being a kid that from the 90s, I'm big on grunge. That's probably my absolute favorite, So all that sort of thing. Yeah, man, that's the go. Very good.
I like a lot of 90s country. So when we were growing up in the garage where we worked on the bikes and our bikes were and everything, there was this old radio and it never turned off unless the power went off and it was on country. So I know like most 90s country like by heart, every word to every song, because we were always in the garage and it was always on. So I think that's why I like it so much. And yeah, I like old rock. I like some new rock too. Just depends on what you're feeling, really, I guess.
Yeah. Cool, man. What's on your your moto bucket list? What haven't you raced or done that you still want to do? Or even go and watch, maybe, if you didn't want to ride it.
Erzberg. I don't know why, because Ron says it's a lot of misery, but at the same at the same time, like I like, I don't know. I don't like, I don't really like racing that stuff. I like riding that stuff. I like that
Okay, yeah.
stuff that is like, oh, you can't go up that or whatever. So I think it would be cool just to go and see it and then just race it. But I mean, heck, I would take my time and have fun with it. Let's be honest, I wouldn't because I don't like getting beat, so I would be racing it, but it would still be fun. But I would think that would be a bucket list. Man, I don't know what else. That Terra Inferno was one of them. That I've seen some of that on YouTube and whatnot from years previous, and that looked cool. Just anything like that's kind of like out of the ordinary. What is the what's the rodeo? It's like enduro cross almost on the streets, overseas somewhere. What's it called?
There's the one where they do the first day through in a town. Is that the one?
Yeah, they've got all the planks, like wooden.
Oh, I can't remember which one that is. Is that it's not Romaniacs. Is that the first day of
It
Romaniacs
might be
where they do it on
Romaniacs.
the street? Yeah, the first, and it's in a town, they're going up steps and down the street and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, that would be
I think
cool.
that's the first day of Romaniacs.
Okay.
Or one of those. It's one of the big hard enduros. Yeah, that their first day. I had Graham Jarvis on the show, what, only two or 3 weeks ago. So yeah, talking to him about it was Bengals. That guy's just amazing, man. He is. Outside of sort of US moto, the hard enduro scene is probably my next favorite thing. I really like it, you know. It's super, super cool, man. Erzberg's definitely on my bucket list to just to go and see, you know, like go and watch it, check out because there's a lot of fun stuff. Look like a fun trip, you know. They have the big beer hall there, you know, and all that sort of thing. Like they have a good time and that and all that there. So yeah, that looks like a real, real good one, man. And like a lot of people guys that go there to ride it, their goal is, man, just to make it to like a certain stage. You know, it's not even to finish because, you know, as you know, some years only like 10 people finish it. So that's
Most years. Yeah, Ryan didn't finish. He timed out when he went over there. But yeah, that would be one of those fun ones that are also, partially misery. And basically, that's what Ron says all the hard enduros are. He's like, you're so miserable when you're out there, but then when you get done, you're like, yeah, I went up that and I went over that. Like, it's then you get some sort of like, I don't know. You get
Satisfaction.
the satisfaction of doing it. I think that's like with most stuff. That's the same thing with like building the rock crawlers and stuff for me. It's like the finished product is what I like. Sometimes I don't like building certain things, but once you get done, then it's like, oh, that's sick. And I built it from scratch. So it's kind of like the same type of deal.
Yeah, man, I kind of look at that like a lot of things in life, man, you know, the things that are really hard, man, like just a hard day's work, boring work, just a hard day's work. If there's something to sit back and look at a bit of an achievement at the end, I get a really good feeling. You know, I could be digging a trench for, you know, anything. Like I could be on a shovel all day, but if I can look back at the end of the day and be like, I can check that out. Yeah, that's done. And I don't know whether that's you know, I don't think all people are like that, but I'm definitely like that. You know, I get a real feeling of satisfaction, you know, because that work ethic that was drummed into me by my dad, I guess, you know, so.
Yeah, it's always yeah, there's a lot of things like that are not that fun while you're doing it, but then you get to enjoy it afterwards.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You got to do some of the hard stuff to allow you to do the fun stuff, huh?
Exactly.
That's it, man.
Work hard, play hard, they say.
That's it. You certainly do, man. You certainly do, man. Hey, man, couple of things I do to finish off the show. Give me your best Aussie accent.
What do you want me to say?
Just do one of the traditional ones. Just give me a good day, mate.
That's what. Good day, mate.
Jeez, you're not too bad. Run that again. Do another.
Good day, mate.
Yeah, you're not too bad. That's actually pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. There's a you know, you're up there. I can't remember them all, but that's definitely up there as one of the better ones.
Well, that's good.
Callum Brower still holds the title for the best Aussie accent. He was legit. He could be like a voice actor, that guy is like. and then there's some that have been just terrible, but yours was pretty good, man.
Well, thanks. Did you tell the ones that were terrible? Did you tell them theirs?
Yeah, yeah, good? Yeah. Yeah, if they were real bad, I'll tell them. I'll be honest, you know. So, that's it, man. All right, cool, man. What I do to finish off the show, we were talking a little bit about campfires, and this is definitely a campfire special. I sing a bit of Kenny Rogers to close out the show, man. I always say to people, if you know the words, then you're welcome to jump on in, and most people don't, so don't feel bad if you don't.
All right.
Long story to it. I won't bore you with that. But yeah, this was something I come up with, and then it just sort of stuck as it's a thing. So
cool.
So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Thank you, man. Thank you very much for your time today. And yeah, good luck with the next adventures, and good luck with the young bloke that you're helping out at Loretta's as well, man.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
Have a good one.